Welcome to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Well, good evening to Breaking the Silence, and welcome to the most beautiful city in the world, Houston, Texas. The sun is just going down behind me. We've kind of had a rainy day in this part of Texas all day long, and I have had, I don't know how many people send me pictures of rainbows tonight, and one was even a double rainbow, just a beautiful evening here. So I'm just glad that you're here. Tonight's going to be a special night. We want you to be able to call some friends, let some people know, hey, tune in, because they have a good guest on tonight that's an author. And one thing about the program that I get so excited about is that not only do we get to hear stories from people of all walks of life, every race, age, and creed around the world, experts, professionals, but people also that have endured the pain and have reached down and took that victim mode and turned it into a victor. And I really appreciate people when they come on the program that they don't just want to tell their story over and over and over. That, and I have to sometimes catch myself, because I think it's not only the story that's important, and we're going to hear the story tonight, but what can you do because of what happened in your life? How can you discover something new that you can use because of what you went through? And how can you help so many other people? And I think that's the key to healing, is helping more people as you go. So I think, to me, that is where I find my best Band-Aid in life, is being able to reach out and people call and want help and spend time with and send them resources and be able to take their hand and walk down the journey with them. Next week, we have a great guest. It's Paulina Melania is going to be on the program next week. A great author of an absolutely fantastic book. Paulina Melania will be next week, 8 p.m. Central Time, live right here in Houston. And if you want to get involved, we would love to get you involved at 888-627-6008. I'm looking here to see if we are live on Facebook, and we are. So we're looking good all the way around. My son Curtis is right there watching, and if you have a comment or a question, if you're on the Facebook account, feel free to type that in. Let us know what you're thinking, and if you have a question, or you can just simply just call in, and we'll tap you right on through. The great people at BBS Radio, the best radio station in the country, we'll be glad to tap you in to our guest and me tonight. We love calling listeners, so please call in if you want to. You know, I think it's important in life, before we get to our first guest, that if the thing I really want you to catch about tonight's show, at least as I'm hoping, Pamela, as I'm getting ready to talk about you, I'm hoping this is the direction that you want to go tonight too, because we don't have preset anything. I want tonight to be a motivation for everybody listening to make a move that you've never made before in life, to make a decision, to make an adjustment to make a tune-up, to make something, a decision or something that changes the way you think or the way that you've handled things in the past. And Albert Einstein that said the definition of crazy is doing the same thing and expecting different results. So if you're going through situations and you just don't know, how am I going to get past this? How am I going to get through this? Well, tonight, we not only have the story, but we have somebody that has taken the time to provide a workbook to be able to help you process your own story, to be able to take that step of making a difference in your life. And I want to applaud that, because a lot of people don't go to that extra step to be able to say, hey, this is what it done for me, and this is exactly what it can do for you, and maybe even more. Tonight, we have Pamela Elaine Lockridge. She was born in Massachusetts. She was raised in Louisiana, and somehow she ended up and landed in Houston, Texas, and was for 20 years or more, I think, an emergency room nurse.
ICU
nurse in probably half of the hospitals right behind me at Texas Medical Center. And why in God's name she decided to leave Houston, but we may find out about that, with her husband and go back to Louisiana. And she lives now in central Louisiana. And she has written a book, and A Survivor's Fast Track to Mental Wholeness, Pimped from 4 to 18. And this is her book. Just as important, this is the workbook that goes with this. These go hand in hand. And I really enjoyed this. I enjoyed this too. But this was really like, wait, that made me think. That made me put shoe leather on me walking. I said, how can I apply this to my life? So Pamela Elaine Lockridge, appreciate you being here with us tonight from Louisiana. Welcome to Breaking the Silence. How are you doing tonight?
I am doing fantastic, Dr. William.
Okay. Now tell me, let's just get down to the root of the matter. Why did you leave Houston?
It got too much concrete, and I wanted to be where there was cows and pastures. Okay. But basically, I left it because my great aunt and my grandmother were getting older. Okay. And of course, you know, you need to go take care of business until they died.
Yeah. And you can find cattle right across the street, but it's only during the rodeo month. You have to go inside the NRG Stadium to be able to find it here downtown Houston. But well, it's just an honor to have you with us tonight. And thank you. I don't know how we even connected. Do you remember how we came across each other, Pamela?
Well, I reach out from what I'm doing now, my advocacy work, and I did reach out to you to help to see about you coming on our show.
Okay. I couldn't remember. I talked to a lot of people all week long, so that's great. So you are still an ICU nurse, or are you into the social work side of it now?
Oh, I retired nursing back when I was about 38, 40, okay, somewhere around there, and then I went back to school after my children left the nest and got my social work degree, but it took me, you know, a while, and now I have a master's in social work.
In social work, fantastic. And I know there was, you have two children, four grandchildren. You have so many letters that you can put behind your name. You would have to have this long of a business card with all those different degrees that you have. That's awesome that you have that. And you are the secretary of the Jesus Lifted Ministries, which is a health ministry to evangelists in America, correct?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay. Now, one thing that I want to just jump into before we get too serious, and we're going to get really serious tonight. I want to kind of warn people that there may be some triggers that are mentioned tonight. If that's the case, feel free to walk away. Don't turn us off, but walk away and grab a cup of water or something, or a cup of coffee, and then come back. If there is things that disturb you about tonight's show. But after being married 37 years to your husband, how does, because I know this wasn't the question that you was expecting to be right out of the chute, how does this kind of past and childhood, Pamela, affect relationships?
Well, you know, whenever a child's abused, it does something to their brain.
Yeah.
It damages their brain. And so, you know, I don't know if it's environment or whatever, but my mother was bipolar, and I inherited bipolar. So with the abuse and everything that happened, it extremely exacerbated that when I was in my 40s. And to the point of, I didn't trust my husband. I would throw things. I would wreck my whole house. And it would be because I was in a mental fog. And then I would come out of that mental fog and I'd look around and say, what happened? Who was that person? Okay. I don't even know if it's personality disorder, really. I mean, you know, there's so much, so many tentacles into child abuse.
Mm-hmm. Before we get into the story, because you were abused 14, 15 years.
Yes, sir.
Of your childhood, all the way up to 18. So from the probably, at least, it's almost a story like mine. It was from the earliest memory that I had as a child. And that's probably why I remembered it, was when I was 4. And up till, you know, I think mine was almost my 17th birthday. You went a year beyond that. How long did it take in your story, and then we're going to backtrack into it, before you ever told anybody what was going on with you?
Anybody significant? Of course, I told my husband, but we couldn't get into it because, you know, I had no pathway into it. But it wasn't until my sister got triggered in the 50s, when she was 50, and she's a year younger than me. In my mid-50s is when the repressed memories came out, and I could not face it. I had to deal with it or die, literally.
Well, that's exactly the same boat I was in. Okay, now, without going into huge detail, and because you could talk about your childhood for 5 hours straight, story after story after story, but just give us a brief account, who, how, what happened to you that you remember, and what kind of ordeals did you endure in your childhood that is detailed in your book that I would recommend you.
Yeah. From the age of 4 to 18, my mother, first off, divorced my biological dad at 4, and then she married a pedophile who she knew was a pedophile when she married him. She worked in the bar 6 nights a week. She was a barmaid, and he was her babysitter for us 3 girls. It was me, my younger sister, Terry, and my other sister, 3 years younger, Paula. And she would leave us there with him. And he sexually abused me. He didn't sexually abuse the other two, but he was grooming me to be his wife later on, because he was an antisocial, and he was an introvert, so he couldn't, you know, be with anybody. My mother was the controlling figure in that marriage, and it was what she said or the highway, and she would turn him in as a pedophile. So he had to dance to her puppet strings. So she had a built-in babysitter with him. She could go live the life she wanted to without having to worry about us, the care of us. She was the most narcissistic, most uncaring woman I've ever met in my entire life to this day.
She's still alive?
I'll get to that.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, I want to bring that out.
Okay, no, go ahead. I'm sorry.
So anyway, he was left with us. He would beat us with the bell. He would stand us in the corner, and if we fell asleep and he woke up, we would get beat with the bell. So we would have to be in the corner all night and then go to school the next day. There was hardly ever a day that I went to school that I didn't have bruises on the back of my legs and my back, and, you know, from the belt, the thick leather belt that he would come in, and the straps together, and, you know, provoke terror in us. Okay, this guy was a terrorist. He's a domestic terrorist, is what I call him. He also would put us in the bathtub, and when the water ran out and it was cold and we were freezing, we'd beg him to let us out of the tub, and he wouldn't. I say that we were POWs before people started talking about POW camps. And if he would bring up things that maybe we did or didn't do, and he would act like the Gestapo, and he would question us and interrogate us and interrogate us and interrogate us. And if somebody didn't confess, we would all get beat. And so who wants to get beat? So nobody would confess, it would all get beat. But he was a monster. And he would come to my bedside at night, and he would digitally arouse me. He would orally arouse me, and then he would make me do oral sex on him. As a 4, 5, 6, 7-year-old, I had to do that.
Was that a nightly thing, Pamela?
Or, oh, yeah. Every night that he wanted.
Was you and your sisters abused too?
Not or sexually. Not sexually. I was the only
just
one.
Just you.
Right.
So the other ones went through the abuse of the beatings, the whippings, but you were the one that was sexually abused also on top of that.
Right.
Okay. And that went all the way through to 18.
Yes. Now, I was so happy when my mother finally was divorcing him, because she went and got her nursing degree. And when I turned 15, she got her degree because she wanted to, she didn't want him anymore. She wanted to be able to take care of herself. Okay. So she divorced him, and I thought, oh my goodness, I'm going to be able to get away from this man. I'm going to not have to worry about, you know, him coming into my room and doing those things to me. Well, what she did, being the narcissist she is and not caring, made me go stay with him because she didn't have enough room for me to stay in the apartment that she had with her and my two sisters. So now I'm living with him with no buffer, with no hope of anybody knowing this. And he just, it was worse for those 3 years.
When did you start letting people know, or did you, that this was going on? Did you ever did anybody ever ask you at school, Pamela, are you okay? I'm noticing these marks on you.
No, back then people didn't, you know, it was just so.
I know.
You know that era. It was the Leave It to Beaver era, and nobody did nothing to anybody, you know. Yeah. So
didn't talk about what happened in the house.
The point I was going to make about that was, go on, because I lost that train, but that's okay.
Right. So as a child, tell me how you emotionally, mentally, relationship-wise deal with this kind of trauma, trauma as a child.
Well, one of the ways I dealt with it, because the anger that was inside of me, is I bullied my younger sisters. I bullied anybody younger than me. I was so angry, okay? And so to
there was
this
a
day,
rage coming up inside of you.
Oh, my God. Right.
When did that rage start happening inside? When did you first notice that you were an angry child?
Probably about 6 or 7.
Okay, so early.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. But then I really got more angry as the years went by. As I'm, you know, the more I mature, the more I was angrier.
Yeah. We're going to take our first break. And on the other side of this break, Pamela, we want to get, first of all, people to know that 888-627-6008. Call us if you have a question or a comment. Get on Chatter by the Darkness Facebook page and comment through there. But on the other side of this, I want to kind of transition into your elementary years, your junior high years, those formative and so important teenage years. And how did that affect friendships, boyfriends, schoolwork, and all that? So we're going to kind of dig into that a little bit, drill down a little bit later, deeper in that layer right after we come back after our first commercial break. So hang right with us, 888-627-6008. We'll be right back, Breaking the Silence with Pamela Lockridge. Be right back. Finally coming very soon will be the release of my second book in the three-part trilogy, Overcoming the Darkness, The Roadmap to Hope. Now, this book will be an in-depth look at the many different facets and emotions that a person goes through when they're experiencing anxiety and trauma in their life, and they're simply searching for hope. And an exciting addition to this book will be a companion journal guide that will come along with it. Also, there's going to be something that I'm very excited about, the youth version of this book called When Dark Clouds Come, The Roadmap to Hope. And it's going to be an excellent tool and guide for teenagers dealing with stress in their lives. So stay tuned for the release date coming very, very soon for these exciting new resources. Now back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams on the BBS Radio Network. Look at the beautiful sky behind me. Is that not gorgeous? That's not a fake picture. That's real. I mean, that's really happening right now. Is that not beautiful?
It is gorgeous.
I just love it. And when you see things like this and you hear stories like what Pamela's sharing with her life, I just want to indicate that that darkness can turn into something beautiful like this if you allow the light to shine through. So we're going to make sure we get to that before the show is over tonight. But Pamela, you were just getting into the anger and the rage, and you said you noticed that around 6 years old. Did that come out in your elementary years with the kids and the friends, or just with your sisters, and you kind of kept it behind closed doors? How did that all kind of work as you was growing up?
It was basically with my sisters. I mean, I'm sure if I'd have done that to somebody else, I'd have been in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
And so it was basically hidden with my sisters. And my one sister still today, she can't stand me because of that. She still blames me. She's still not healed from it. And I feel for her, you know, and I feel bad that I did that. I feel really bad.
Does both your sisters believe the story? The stories?
Oh, yeah.
They just one has the animosity because of the way you treated her as a child.
They both believe the story. They know it was true. One of them witnessed it. Yeah.
Okay. So tell me about some of your school years as we work out through your teenage.
In elementary school, I mean, I made great grades. And, you know, not only did I have to, but something about it grounded me. Okay, yeah. It just made me realize that I had something there. You know, I wasn't crazy. What was happening in my world was crazy, but I wasn't crazy, you know. And one of the things that kept me going and having some kind of hope is that any day somebody would find this out, right, and it would end, right? So every day was a new day that I had hope that somebody would rescue me, okay? If I'd have known it had been to 18, I probably would have just dug a hole, went inside it, and pulled the dirt down, okay? Yep. But God had other plans, I'll just say that.
There you go. So, what about friendships when you was in those ages?
No, because let me tell you why. What happens if you have a friendship? You end up telling your friend something, right? And then somebody finds out about it. And with me being under threat of death by this man, he threatened me, you know, with my life if I've told anybody. And he was an avid hunter, and he would hang deer in our backyard, and he would gut them from the groin to the chest. You think a child is going to go against a man that cuts up squirrels and birds and deer and everything else? I mean, if he could do that to a poor animal, what's he going to do to me?
I never thought about that. That was our growing up years in the country.
Oh, yeah.
You had the guns hanging behind the car seat in the truck. You went out and you watched Dad shoot stuff and come home and gut it and skin it right in front of you. I remember those days. Yeah.
Okay. So as a child, what am I thinking in my mind? Okay. Am I really going to tell him this guy who threatens to kill me? And he didn't threaten anybody else. He threatened me with my life if I told him. So that was the end of that. I wasn't going to tell anybody. My mouth was shut.
What about the teenage years?
Well, I couldn't have boyfriends. If I was outside and a boy was out there, he was at the window watching. He was like the Gestapo, I'm telling you. And of course, whenever I moved in with him at age 16, because now I'm gone, my mother's divorced him, he would let me use his car to go out and party. When I got home, I had to pay the price with sexual favors. Plus, I had to listen to him ask me questions about who I had sex with, who I was with, blah, 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 blah. You know, just beating me down, you know. And he would actually, too, throw things. He would get angry and throw stuff at me and while he was doing all that. So he was sick.
Yeah. So how did you how did this all end? If your mom divorced him, you married again, 3 years you were literally living with the perpetrator. How did it finally stop?
Well, one more thing I want to tell you, my teenage years, what he did. I was outside and he was drunk. Oh, he would always get drunk too. And he got high. He was always both high and drunk. And one time I came home and he was mad at me. He went and got his chainsaw and he's chasing me around his truck with the chainsaw. And had I not ducked, he hit the side of the truck with the chainsaw, but it'd been me if I hadn't ducked. So. But anyway, how it ended was this. He had a Mach 1 Mustang, and he kept promising me that Mustang when I turned 18. And so, you know, you do this sexual favor for this long, and you're going to get the title to this car. And when I turned 18, he knew I could tell on him, so there's no way, you know, that he wouldn't have given it to me. And that's when I got away from him, when I had a car.
So you got away and moved out and you were on your own.
Yes. And I started stripping. Of course, I never stripped. I never took my bra off or anything like that, because back in the day, you didn't have to. But I worked in a strip club, and that's how I put myself through nursing school. And I only worked there long enough to get my nursing degree. I knew that was not going to be my career. And I didn't like it. I didn't like doing it, even.
Ken, you know, without getting too graphic, Pamela, what kind of value did you have on your body after this kind of dehumanizing events throughout your childhood and teenage years? Did you have any? Or was it just a tool that you used to bring in more money at that point when you became a stripper?
Well, you know, I danced and I made money, sold drinks, but I did not sleep around a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, I had some kind of, you know, because he had done that to me, why am I going to go do that to myself?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I didn't want it. I didn't like it, you know, but you know, when you have emotions for a boy, I had a boy that I dated while I was doing the stripping, and you know, I was exclusive with him, and you know, but later on when I moved to Houston, I went to bars, rock and roll bars, and slept around some.
So but it wasn't me, like a,
what?
Yeah, tell me how this affects relationships outside of, it's already over, you're out, your college years, you're after your college years, and how did it affect relationships and marriages if there was more than one marriage?
Yeah, I had two marriages. The first one I coordinated because I wanted a family, I wanted to be married, and I thought I could do it, but I didn't know I was so sick that I could, okay? And I can tell I had bipolar even in that first marriage. And I literally said to myself, I've got to get away from this guy or I'm going to drive him crazy. Okay. So I was going to nursing school. I was trying to have a rock and roll band. I was like 20, 21 or 3, 22, 23, and I was married to him, and all of them fell apart and crumbled around my ears. I failed nursing school. I had to wait out a semester to go back. My first marriage crumbled, and the rock and roll band went away and never happened again. And I know I can tell you that the reason it did is because God shut that door and he didn't want me going there. So.
How were you, because we're going to get on to God, because I really want to bring him in, obviously. How were you with your mental state of depression, of anxiety, of rage, of stress? How was you doing and coping during those middle years like that?
Oh, you don't have that when you're doing Quaaludes and marijuana and, you know, smoking and hanging out in the clubs and getting drunk and staying high and, you know, partying. I mean, you know, you're escaping, man. I escape that stuff.
So you're self-medicating as much as you can?
Oh, yeah. I had to stay that way. But I didn't know why. It was just, I mean, you know, I don't know why it's fun, but it was funner than laying in bed with this guy next to my bed, you know?
Yeah. Did you at one point have a court situation with?
Oh, yes. Yes, sir.
When did that come about?
Okay. In my 50s, my sister went into the mental ward. And she came out with a $14,000 mental health bill. And she contacted our abuser and told him if he didn't pay that bill, we were all going to take him to court. Well, I didn't know she was talking to him and telling him that because I wasn't planning on going to court with this guy. This stuff was finished for me. Well, when she told me about it, something clicked and I just went crazy. I ended up back in the hospital because I see myself on the stand talking about this stuff, and I'm like, I can't do this, okay? So I totally shut down, went into a catatonic state, ended up in the hospital. And while I was in the hospital, Mark calls me, my husband now, and he says, you've got to call the police. She wants to talk to you. So I talked to her, and it was a sex crimes detective wanting to know if I wanted to prosecute my abuser. And I'm like, not really. I've forgiven him and I've done all that. She said, well, I have a case and I'm going to have to ask you to come in so we can close this case. So what ended up happening was, found out later, him and his sister, who is very wealthy, and she takes care of him because all he was a construction worker. And so I think she probably took some of his money and invested it. So he had annuities and things like that. But what happened was while he was there, they decided they wanted to get a protective order against my sister, and they just threw me in for good measure. And what they were trying to do is make us look crazy, so if we did say anything and bring it up, we would just be crazy. And no, this didn't happen, right? Mm-hmm. So this guy goes in, the abuser, goes into the police. Now, prescription had run as far as criminal, and he knew this, okay? And so he went in, and he's filling out these protective order papers, and believe it or not, it's very difficult to fill out. And this guy's a construction worker, and think of the education he probably has, you know, zero to none. So he goes in there, and he's got to have help filling these papers out. So he calls a detective over to help him. In the midst of them trying to do this, he said, the reason I need a protective order is because I sexually abused her. She said, stand up, sir. You're under arrest. And it ended up she was a female sex crimes detective, and she knew how to get the truth out. So I have an actual video on a thumb drive of him telling on himself about the abuse. Well, what happened was I got a Christian lawyer. He was ready to fight this tooth and nail, and it was a civil case. It wasn't the abuse backward. It was the abuse forward, okay? When he took it to the police, he broke my privacy rights and caused a tort injury, if you know what that is in law. Mm-hmm. It's a tort injury, privacy rights. It's, you know, you can get actual civil damage. So when he did that, and his sister was so wealthy, they must have spent about $250,000 with this criminal attorney, the best attorney in the city where they lived, and they fought it. It went to Louisiana Appellate Court twice, the Louisiana Supreme Court twice, and then 2 weeks from the trial, they mediated. And it was just amazing. And, but 5 years, you know, the first district court it went to, and the judge said it can go forward, because he could have said no, we're shutting this down. Well, when he said it could go forth, he actually apologized to me from the bench. Said, I am so sorry you had to go through that. Can you imagine how validating that was?
Well,
and
sure,
that I could say to myself, I'm not crazy. You can see I'm not crazy.
Right. So turning the corner now, how did this come out? When did you decide that you wanted to write this down and share it with the world? What was the catalyst that caused you wanting to let people know all around the world?
Sir, I never in a million years thought I was going to write a book. Okay,
you did a good job with it.
Thank you. That's the Lord, and that's my training as a social worker right there. You're seeing it. After writing zillions of papers, right? Research. So, what happened was the day we went and mediated, okay, and we settled out of court, I walked out of the lawyer's office and I got closure. I can't tell you what it was just like I was a new person.
So all
I
the
got
baggage
it too. What?
Dropped, the baggage dropped and you received closure on this.
Yeah.
So then you could release it.
I had a story. I never had a story before. I had a story that I could tell and then tell how I didn't want to just, I mean, telling a story is one thing, but you've got to have some kind of hope.
Yo, beautiful.
You know? And
absolutely.
That was hope. And I could see that, man, other people can get these people. These people are cowards. These people do this behind closed doors. They don't tell people because they're scared to death. You think they're terrorizing you? You can terrorize them in the court system. You can terrorize them by going right down the police station two miles from where they live, telling the cops what they did, and let the cops go to their door. Don't tell me those people are going to be scared. They'll be scared out their wits. Probably
you're right, because these people survive in darkness. That's when the evil comes out in them. And that's why, you know, my book, Shattered by the Darkness, Overcoming the Darkness, and my last book that will come out in a couple of years is Dancing in the Darkness. And it's because darkness is the place they feel safe. And the only way to expose them is to shine the light on them. And
but guess what else, Dr. William? Silence. You've got to open your mouth. Open your mouth wide. Tell whoever will listen, not anybody that'll listen, because most people won't. You've got to tell the mental health professionals. You've got to tell the courts. You've got to tell the police. You've got to tell, any psychiatrist. You've got to tell organizations, senators, anybody that has some kind of power. Okay.
Yeah. Now we're going to take our last break, because I think this is a great segue into how I want to finish, because you nailed it on you hit the nail on the head when you said, you know, you got to not just tell the story, but you got to offer the hope. And I really want to get to this on the other side of this break. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. Well, I think one of my greatest blessings in all of my life is I got to meet her.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
It was in the early 80s. And, of course, what I went through was going through mortuary training. We used her book as the textbook on grief. And I really am interested. I want to pick your brain on where did you come up with the grief stages and the abuse stages, how they go hand in hand. And that was a masterpiece of work. We're going to talk about that on the other side of this break. Jump in. I'm looking down the Facebook page to see if there's any comments. I don't see any in the chat room yet, but feel free to call in 888-627-6008. We'll be on the other side of this break, and we're going to talk about hope, and we're going to talk about faith, and we're going to tell you and let her, Pamela, tell you how you can find both of those things in the middle of what you've experienced, no matter how dark you think it is. We're going to get to the hope on the other side of this break. Hang with us. We'll be right back.
From HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers, A Child Called It, and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years, and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
Welcome back. I tell you what, I love live. I love live radio. I love podcasts. And, you know, when it goes off into the archive world, I don't even know how that works. But I love that also. But I love being able to look down at my phone and see responses and comments. And I'm having people say, this is just like, and they tell me their story. And I love that, Pamela. So you're hitting the heartstrings. And that's important, because when you see, because you mentioned you had to open your mouth, that's not easy. And I always encourage everybody, and maybe you can jump in, I hope you do, to at least journal. You have to at least let it out. You have to open the can, no matter how many years it's been rusted shut or whatever closet door has had the key locked and you thought you'd never get in there, but open it up and express it. Was journaling important to you at all?
No, I didn't know about any of that.
Okay, so you didn't know
about
it
now. I know about it hindsight. And what I tell people now is you either get help, professional help with a trauma-based therapist now, or you will be getting it later. You will be in the hospital later. So you can be proactive, or you can have it fall in on you and crash in on you one day, and you will end up in the hospital. It's just a matter of time.
It's going to take its toll. It will come out. It'll come out one way or the other, and you can bring it out, or it will expose itself in ugly ways. I went through that. I know you went through that too. It'll destroy you.
And I'm trying to get people at earlier ages, and I think that's why I'm pioneering the way, and you're pioneering the way now. Pioneering, I don't know if you're hearing my word right,
yeah.
But we are pioneers, and we are laying the foundation that is going to, people are going to come along and get fast-tracked. Instead of having to wait till they're 60, 50, 70-year-olds that, you know, can't even tell their story right now. And I want people to know the earlier you deal with this, the better quality of life you're going to have.
Oh, beautiful. That's a beautiful statement, because that's so true. And this book that's getting ready to come out, the youth version of it, When the Dark Clouds Come, is probably the one that I'm more excited about, because every teenager in this country needs to read how to deal with bullying, how to deal with disrespect, how to deal with this anger and rage. And I would have done anything to have a book that I could have reached to be able to get help through what I was dealing with in my own room by myself, trying to handle the problems. And with that thought, as you now have a therapy workbook. Tell me, what good can this do somebody that hasn't dealt with it yet?
Well, the workbook is to go along with the book and take to their professional. Okay, I don't really think that a person should do this alone. Okay, having a licensed person with you from this type of trauma, because you could easily get into, you know, having bad thoughts and not be able to get out. Okay, so it's just like, you know, having a gunshot wound. You know, you're going to go have it looked at quickly. You're not going to wait and say, "Well, I'll take care of this later." Okay, this is something that's worse than a gunshot wound. I mean, it's festering inside of you, and you need to have it looked at. You know. And, I mean, it's going to affect everything. You know, in social work, we're into systems theories. And when one part of the system suffers, the whole system suffers. And the thing about narrative therapy, though, and I think you may know this, Dr. Gregory, that Baylor College is the only one that I think is training people now, therapists in narrative therapy. Okay.
He is one of the leaders. I'm not for sure it's the only one yet, but okay. Yes, absolutely. We are infamous with that.
Okay. Well, we're talking about the grief stages. I correlated that when I studied theories and Kubler-Ross, Elizabeth, you know, when I came across those stages of grief and loss, I said, you know what? I have not grieved the loss of my sexual innocence in my childhood. I need to grieve. And I started going through that, and that was the structure of the book, was those. And then I added three stages: closure, striving, and thriving. And those are in the book. And
yes.
Closure. What happened with me with closure is I didn't have that tape going around in my head anymore. Every morning I'd wake up and, oh, the child abuse, oh, those people, you know, and it was just a tape that would go around my head, and I'd have to do something to escape that tape. I don't have that tape anymore. Those people, there's a brick wall built up. I don't even see them. They don't exist to me anymore. I don't even think about them. I mean, it's just amazing. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And if God will do it for me, he'll do it for you.
Since you mentioned that, what part and how important was faith in your journey to be able to get through this?
Okay, well, when I was 29, fixing to turn 30, I went into a major depressive disorder from something that happened. When I got my nursing degree, that was my identity. Pamela never had an identity. She was a sexual object who never had an identity. Okay. Now I was a mom. I was a wife. Those are roles. Those are not identities. And nursing's a role too. But I took on nursing as an identity. Well, I got into an argument with one of the nurses who was over me, and she got me fired. So when I got fired, I was like, who am I? You know, this reached me to the core. So I went to the lawyers and I tried to get redress. And they said, you know, any employer can fire you at any time for any reason. And I just turned that anger and that bitterness and all that raw stuff and grit and all that inside. And I went into a 6-month depression. Okay. Now, my husband had been praying and reading the Bible, and he'd come and show me. Tell me about God. And I'd say, get out of my face, you holy roller. You don't know what I'm going through. Blah, blah, blah. Well, one night we were sitting around and I just couldn't function anymore. I couldn't take it anymore. I was really a walking, dying person. A dead walking person. Walking dead. You want to know a zombie? That's a zombie. Okay.
Yeah.
So what ended up happening, my husband said, can we pray? And I was ready to do anything at that point. Anything. So he prayed, and he prayed in the name of Jesus. And when he prayed in that name, I did not know what it was, but a peace came over me that I never felt my entire life before. I mean, it was just phenomenal. And I was so scared to go to sleep that night. It was late at night, and it was time for bed, and I was so scared because I thought, I'm not going to feel this in the morning. I'll be right back where I was. Well, when I woke up, Dr. Williams, I heard birds singing. The world looked different. I get in the shower, and it's not like the dirt from the outside was coming off. It was like dirt from the inside was just flowing out of me. Instantaneously, the depression was lifted, and I said, Jesus, if you're real, I want to know you. I've been in relationship ever since. And I have the faith. You know, you remember what Jesus said? He said, he who loves the most, he who is forgiven the most loves the most. And look at all I needed to be forgiven. Even though I was not to blame,
right.
I was still filthy. I was still dirty. I was still, you know, not living for him. And all that sin just was washed away. And I was new. A new creation.
I think you do a great job in the book incorporating not only Kubler-Ross and the scientific research that she has, and not only in the abuse angle and the research and the work there, but also you incorporate scripture from the beginning to end too. And but I don't want people to think, oh no, I don't want to read this book if I'm not a believer, because that's a delicate line you have to walk. This doesn't do that. This doesn't slam it. If you don't want to read those verses, you just go right on through. And it is just done in how it affected you, how it made a difference in your life. And if you want to add those items in the back of the book, you're welcome to have the monthly reading plans and things of that. But you don't have to. It's a choice that you can make. And the story is valid. And the validity of being able to go from all these stages and then apply it to you in the workbook, I recommend this. And I really think people, like you said at the beginning, grab your journal, grab your notebook, and start writing this stuff down and go through the stages. It will be a huge, huge benefit. We only have a couple minutes left. Pamela, what is some of the what is the one thing that you want people to be able to grab and take home after this 45 minutes of talk tonight? What where can they find their hope?
Okay, well, of course, I'm a woman of faith, but not everybody believes in the same way I do, and you know they have to go the way they go, and you know there's no judgmental here. The whole book and all of it is non-judgmental, you know, and I'm not trying to force my faith on anybody. I'm just telling you what happened to me, and hope people get the workbook, because the workbook doesn't have scripture in it. I mean, I'm, you know, that's the part that I didn't want to, you know, personally ostracize somebody from, because that workbook is what's going to heal.
Right. How can they get the book? Because I will make sure we get that out. How can you get the workbook right now if they want to get this?
On my website, www.womensurvivorsinbusiness.org.
Women's Survivors with an S in business.org.
Yes, sir.
Women Survivors in business.org. That is your personal webpage, and people can contact you through that.
Yes, sir.
If they have a question, if they want to just talk to you, maybe reach out to you, email you, you'd be willing to talk to them back?
Absolutely.
Fantastic. I do that, I don't know how many times a day, with people that contact me. That to me, I hope that does the same for you. It gives you, it helps you heal.
Okay. Can I say one more thing?
Absolutely. We got a minute. Okay. Go.
I just got promoted, and I'm with NASCA, the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse, which Dr. Williams will be coming on the show. I am the director of communications, and I schedule people to come on and tell their survivor stories like you, Dr. Williams.
Okay, and, fantastic. I can't wait to be on that program.
Yeah, I think your date is May, end of May.
End of May. Okay, I will look at my calendar, and that's great. Looking forward to being on that program, too. Pamela, thank you. Thank your husband. Thank your family for sharing you with us tonight. And thank you for sharing the story. And I really encourage people to not only get this book, but work this book. If you get it, it's like buying an exercise book and not doing the exercises. If you get it, do it, and it's going to make a difference in your life. Thank you, Pamela, for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Like we like to end every show, each and every week, no matter what you have gone through, no matter what kind of darkness has come upon you, one instance or hundreds of instances, one day or years, I want to let you know, everybody kind of scoot in. There's hope. There's always hope. Don't forget that. Don't forget that. If you need help, reach out. Get somebody. Get in touch with somebody. contact us on Shattered by the Darkness webpage. Get a hold of Pamela. Get a hold of somebody and end up and saying, how can I receive help and get that? Join us for each week, each Sunday night, 8 p.m. Central, for another edition of Breaking the Silence, live from Houston, Texas. God bless. Have an awesome week, and we'll talk to you next Sunday night. Take care.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1 for the next episode of Breaking the Silence.